Welcome to Reader's Digest, brought to you by Owl Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center in San Antonio. I'm John Fisher, and during the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from Reader's Digest. First, 13 Things, Amazing Facts About Salt, collected by Jen McCaffrey of Reader's Digest. Number 1. Salt was so valuable in ancient Rome that soldiers were sometimes paid with it. In fact, the word salary comes from the Latin word sal, for salt. When a soldier was doing a lousy job, his paycheck might be cut, which is how we got the expression, quote-unquote, not worth his salt. Number 2. Salt can still be valuable today. Amethyst Bamboo 9X salt, which rings up at $398 a pound, may be the most expensive in the world. This pricey stuff takes a lot of time to produce. It's roasted 9 times inside a bamboo pole at temperatures exceeding 1400 degrees Fahrenheit. One store says the resulting delicacy, quote, smells like something dragons use to season their victims before eating them, unquote. Number 3. Historically, salt's value came from its ability to preserve food. Venice, Italy may be famous for its canals now, but salt imports fueled its rise as an influential trade power by the end of the 13th century. Number 4. Salt also took on a great deal of symbolic value. There's a reason it is mentioned so many times in the Bible. For example, salt of the earth, a pillar of salt, and a covenant of salt. Its preservative properties made it an apt metaphor for permanence and conviction. Number 5. Most people know about the health risks associated with sodium, but reducing your intake isn't always easy. More than 75% of the sodium Americans eat come from processed foods. Bread, cured meats, and canned soup top the list. Even foods that don't taste salty may contain it. Instant oatmeal with maple and brown sugar, for instance, contains 170 milligrams of sodium per ounce, a little more than a small bag of potato chips. Number 6. Even French fries aren't necessarily the biggest culprit. A 2012 study that examined sodium levels of fast food menu items from different countries found that pizza and burgers contained more sodium than French fries because they come in larger serving sizes. Number 7. Extra salt might be lurking in your meat, even if you cook at home and are very careful. According to the USDA, about 60% of all raw meat and poultry products are injected with or soaked in a salty solution. The words enhanced, marinated, basted, or improved on the packaging can signal the presence of salt. To avoid it, opt for label wording such as contains up to 4% retained water, says Christy Brissett, RDN, president of 8020 Nutrition. Number 8. Sea salt may sound healthier than table salt, but most sea salts contain roughly the same proportion of sodium, about 40%, as table salt. If you are looking for sodium-free flavoring, try garlic, pepper, oregano, sage, rosemary, and other spices or herbs. Number 9. Even if you don't have hypertension, it's still a good idea to cut down on your salt intake to reduce your blood pressure, according to a 2017 review of 185 studies. Number 10. For older folks especially, a heavy hand with a salt shaker may also hurt your head. A study of 975 people ages 60 to 80 with hypertension found that reducing sodium in their diets was associated with lower risk of headache. Number 11. Still, we all need at least some salt. It facilitates the transport of nutrients and oxygen, which allows nerves to transmit messages and help our muscles work. The average adult's body contains about 250 grams of sodium, the equivalent of about 3 or 4 shakers of salt. Number 12. In the 1920s, salt became a primary tool in the fight against goiter, a thyroid disorder caused by iodine deficiency. Iodized salt became common in American kitchens, and cases of goiter nearly disappeared. Today, only about 53% of table salt sold through retail is iodized. And finally, number 13 of the amazing facts about salt, 13 things in Reader's Digest. All that said, the number one use of salt in the United States isn't on food at all. In the year 2016, about 44% of salt went toward de-icing roads, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. Only 3% was used in agricultural and food processing. Next, these seven baffling mysteries have obsessed detectives, scholars, and explorers for years. Are the answers out there? Here's Unsolved by Jacopo de Acercia and Lauren Kahn in Reader's Digest. First, diplomatic crisis, sickening noises. In December 2016, a CIA officer checked in to the American Embassy's health office in Havana, suffering from nausea, headache, and dizziness. Days later, two more CIA officers reported similar ailments. By late 2018, the number grew to 26 Americans and 13 Canadians experiencing nausea, hearing loss, vertigo, nosebleeds, and focusing issues. In all the cases, victims claimed the symptoms were triggered by a strange noise they'd heard at their homes or hotel rooms. One person said the noise was high-pitched. Another described, quote, a beam of sound pointed into their rooms, unquote. Some insisted that the noise more closely resembled marbles rolling across the floor. The illnesses confounded medical experts. Doctors at the University of Pennsylvania, who examined some of the victims, diagnosed concussion-like symptoms, but found no signs they'd suffered concussions. We know what you must be thinking. The Cuban government is up to something, right? The Cubans vehemently deny they're responsible, and many American investigators believe them. That's because they still don't know who or what made the victim sick. Was it a new type of weapon? The CIA claims it doesn't know of any weaponry that could cause these symptoms. What about ultrasound? One theory holds that a pair of covert eavesdropping devices placed too close to each other by Cuban agents may have inadvertently produced such a reaction, like the kind of feedback you hear when someone stands too close to a microphone. But the FBI has found no evidence to substantiate that argument. In fact, ultrasound is above the range of human hearing. Recordings of the sounds from some of the victims only added to the confusion. Two scientists who studied the recordings believe they captured the sound of lovelorn male crickets. One of the scientists, Alexander Stubbs of the University of California, Berkeley, says the insects are incredibly loud. You can hear them from inside a diesel truck going 40 miles an hour on the highway. Still, the scientists had no idea why the sounds might lead to illness in humans. Maybe it was just nerves. Cuba is a high-threat, high-stress post, a former embassy official told ProPublica.org. Diplomats are warned that, quote, there will be surveillance. There will be listening devices in your house, probably in your car. For some people, that puts them in a high-stress mentality, in a threat anticipation mode, unquote. True, but then how to explain what happened in China? In May 2018, an American posted in the consulate in Guangzhou was diagnosed with the very same mystery illness. Ultimately, 15 Americans were evacuated. While the seemingly airborne cause of these brain injuries is still a mystery, the fallout is clear. The Americans removed 60% of their diplomats from Cuba and expelled 15 Cuban diplomats from Washington, D.C. The mysterious sounds may well be the opening shots in a new kind of Cold War. Number 2. History rewritten, roaming ruins. It's not unusual to find junk in Brazil's Guanabara Bay, but what Robert Marks unearthed there in 1982 was an unusual kind of foreign matter. In an underwater field the size of three tennis courts, located 15 miles from shore, lay the remains of some 200 Roman ceramic jars, a few fully intact. According to Marks, a professional treasure hunter, the jars appeared to be twin-handled amphorae that were used to transport goods such as grains and wine in the 3rd century. But how did they get there? The first Europeans didn't reach Brazil until the year 1500. The Romans, who traded primarily in Mediterranean port cities and the Middle East, had little incentive to invest in ships that could cross oceans. However, they did sail as far as India. Perhaps some untrained navigators lost his way in a storm. Or maybe mutineers steered the ship westward. We may never know, nor are we likely to uncover more evidence. Brazil closed the Bay of Jars to further research in the year 1983 in an effort to deter looters, it said. Marks claims the government didn't want the area explored because finding Roman-era artifacts there would mean that, contrary to Brazil's official history, the Portuguese were not the first Europeans to reach the country. And the truth? It's resting 100 feet under the sea. Number 3. Mystical visions, twin reincarnations. Identical twins Jillian and Jennifer Pollock were born on October 4, 1958, into a family scarred by tragedy. On a Sunday morning in May 1957, their older sisters, Jacqueline, 6 years old, and Joanna, 11 years old, had been struck and killed by a car while walking hand in hand to church in their small English parish of Hexham. When the twins arrived 17 months later, their grieving father, John Pollock, was certain they were actually his dead daughters reborn. Their mother, Florence Pollock, wasn't so sure. But then, odd things happened. When the twins started talking, they would ask for the same toys their sisters had played with, toys they could not have known existed because they had long been stored away. Although the Pollocks had left Hexham when the twins were less than a year old, when they brought them for a visit, their first at age 4, the twins pointed out locations that had been meaningful to their sisters, but which the twins had never seen, such as the school the deceased sisters had attended and their favorite playground. Even more chilling were the twins' apparent quote-unquote memories of the deaths of their sisters. Up until the age of 5, each suffered recurring nightmares of being run over by a car. These nightmares sometimes evolved into daytime terrors. "The car, it's coming for us," the twins would shriek at the mere sound of a car engine firing up in a small alleyway. Florence, a reincarnation skeptic, couldn't think of any rational explanation for how the twins had come to act out their sisters' agonizing final moments with such apparent accuracy. "The blood's coming out of your eyes," Jillian would cry, cradling her sister's head tenderly in her arms as John and Florence looked on in horror. "It's where the car hit you." In 1963, Dr. Ian Stevenson, an expert on reincarnation at the University of Virginia, began to study the Pollock sisters. Finding no evidence that the twins' apparent past life memories had been manufactured or suggested by their parents, he concluded it was virtually impossible not to believe they were living proof of reincarnation. The twins' quote-unquote memories gradually faded as they reached adolescence. Then, for a brief period in her early 20s, Jillian experienced a series of visions of herself as a young child playing in a sandbox surrounded by gardens and an orchard. The Pollocks immediately recognized that as their home in Wickham, a village where they'd lived with Joanna in the years before Jacqueline had been born. The catch? Jillian had never been to Wickham. Number 4. Mass murder missing on a mountain. On January 23, 1959, 9 college students and their tour guide, Igor Dyatlov, set out on what was to be a 21-day hiking excursion through the Ural Mountains in the former USSR. On February 2nd, the group skied down Mount Ortonton, English translation, Mount Don't Go There. On February 12, when the group was scheduled to return home, only one student, 21-year-old Yuri Udent, had arrived, and he had left the group early because of illness. When none of the others came home, a search party was organized. What the searchers found would haunt them. On February 26th, they discovered the hikers' tent. It had been sliced open from the inside. There were multiple pairs of snowy footprints, some made with bare feet, leading away from it. The bodies of the first two hikers were found wearing only underwear beneath a tall cedar tree, the flesh on their hands raw and pulpy from attempting to scramble up the trunk. The next two were found one day later, and another hiker 6 days later, all showing signs of hypothermia. One had a fractured skull. It wasn't until the spring thaw began in May that the remaining four were discovered under 13 feet of snow in a ravine 82 yards from the cedar tree. Three had clearly died of severe internal injuries consistent with a tremendous physical impact comparable to a car crash, including a skull and rib fractures. Yet none bore visible external injuries. It was as if a deadly force had crushed them without having actually touched them. They had all apparently died on the 11th day of their trip, February 2nd, the last day on which any of them had written in their journals. The investigation continued, and in late May it took a shocking turn. Some of the hikers' clothing tested positive for radioactivity. On May 28, 1959, 1 day after the Soviet military got wind of the results of the radiation testing, the investigation was summarily closed. The official conclusion? The hikers had met with an unnamed, quote-unquote, overwhelming force. Of course, that abrupt announcement just intensified public speculation. Theories have included an explosion of a Soviet test missile, a UFO attack, hallucinogenic drugs, and even a Bigfoot-like monster. "If I had a chance to ask God just one question," said Yudin, the one surviving skier, who, by the way, died in the year 2013 at age 75, "it would be, what might have happened to my friends that night?" Their memory at least lives on at the spot where they died. It is now called the Dyatlov Pass. Number 5. Brain Sickness Epidemic – Living Statues. From the years 1917 to 1928, 500,000 people were afflicted with a ghastly condition that could be part of the plotline of a horror film. The victims, very much alive and conscious, found themselves in inexplicably frozen states, their static bodies prisons for their minds. Encephalitis lethargica, or EL, aka the sleeping sickness, first appeared in Europe and quickly spread around the world, reaching epidemic levels in North America, Europe, and India by the year 1919. About a third of those stricken with the illness died. Of the survivors, nearly half eventually found themselves unable to physically interact with the world around them, all the while fully aware of their surroundings. Though occasionally capable of limited speech, eye motion, and even laughter, they generally appeared as living statues, totally motionless for hours, days, weeks, or years. The cause is unknown, but one theory is brain inflammation triggered by a rare strain of Streptococcus, the bacteria responsible for many sore throats each year. Science's best guess is that the bacteria mutated, provoking the immune system to attack the brain, leaving the victim helpless. None of this explains why the illness disappeared only to resurface sporadically, be it in Europe in the 1950s or in China 10 years ago when a 12-year-old girl was hospitalized for 5 weeks with the disease. Are such occurrences the new normal, or are they signs that EL could be planning something bigger any day? A 2004 analysis of 20 patients with symptoms remarkably similar to EL concluded that whatever ailed them, quote-unquote, is still prevalent. As such, history's so-called sleeping sickness remains the stuff of nightmares. Number 6. The Perfect Crime – Vanishing Hijacker. On the night before Thanksgiving, 1971, a middle-aged man wearing a business suit boarded a commercial flight headed from Portland, Oregon to Seattle. He ordered a bourbon and soda, then calmly informed a flight attendant that he had a bomb in his attaché case. Having gotten her attention, he dictated the following message to the cockpit. "I want $200,000 by 5 p.m. in cash. Put it in a knapsack. I want 2 back parachutes and 2 front parachutes. When we land, I want a fuel truck ready to refuel. No funny stuff, or I'll do the job." His boarding pass read Dan Cooper, but thanks to a communication error, the newspapers identified him more cryptically as DB. Over the next 2 hours, DB Cooper never took off his dark glasses. He nursed a second bourbon and waited patiently while the plane circled Puget Sound. "He seemed rather nice," one of the hijacked flight attendants later said. On the ground, authorities scrambled to assemble the cash, parachutes, and fuel truck, while the 36 passengers on board were led to believe the delay was entirely routine. Upon landing in Seattle and receiving a knapsack full of $20 bills and 4 parachutes, Cooper released the passengers and all but 4 of the crew. He demanded to be flown on to Mexico City, but first he had one final instruction. He was to be left alone in the cabin. As the plane took off at about 7:40 p.m., the 4-person crew huddled in the cockpit. Per Cooper, the plane flew below 10,000 feet at a speed slower than 200 knots, too low and too slow for military jets to follow closely. Just 20 minutes later, a warning light flashed, indicating that the rear door had been opened and its staircase deployed. When the plane landed in Reno, Nevada for refueling, the cabin was empty. Cooper had taken his knapsack and parachuted off into the night. Not a single witness saw him jump. He was never seen again. The ransom money, identifiable through serial numbers, was never used. Did Cooper plummet to his death? Did he survive only to somehow lose the knapsack? Or had the money been merely an afterthought, more of a means of spinning a story for newspapers and for history? The FBI spent the next 9 years trying to find the answers. Then, in the year 1980, a boy camping in rural Washington discovered 3 wads of cash along the banks of the Columbia River, which the FBI later identified as a portion of the ransom. But the trail remained cold until the year 2018, when a man named Carl Lauren presented the FBI with an audio tape of his deceased friend, Walter Recca, confessing to being D.B. Cooper. Around the same time, a documentary filmmaker named Thomas Colbert was building a case that Cooper was actually 74-year-old Robert Rackstraw. Rackstraw, a former Special Forces paratrooper with 22 different aliases, had been a person of interest early on, but he was cleared in the year 1979. Colbert based his claim in part on a letter Cooper allegedly sent to the Washington Post that included the number 717171. In Vietnam, Rackstraw was in the 371st Regiment, or 371s. Neither of those stories was enough to convince the FBI, which is why the case of D.B. Cooper remains the only unsolved skyjacking in the history of American aviation. And finally, here's number 7 of Unsolved in Reader's Digest: Sudden Extinction, the New World's Lost Colony. In March 1590, John White finally left England on a rescue mission to Roanoke Colony, the first permanent English settlement in North America. White was Roanoke's governor, but he had been away gathering food and supplies to bring back to the struggling colony since its founding in the year 1587. The fate of Roanoke's residents had weighed heavily on his mind, and for good reason. Among those he'd left on the island, part of what is now North Carolina's Outer Banks, were his wife, his daughter, and his infant granddaughter, who was the first English child born in the New World. White returned to Roanoke on August 18, 1590, and found nothing. The entire settlement was abandoned, its homes and battlements dismantled, it was as if the entire colony of 115 had vanished. The only hint of Roanoke's fate was the word Croatoan carved onto a fence post and the letters CRO carved onto a tree. Since White had instructed his colonists to carve a Maltese cross on a tree if they were moved by force, the absence of one gave White hope that the settlers had relocated to nearby Croatoan Island, which was inhabited by the friendly Croatoan tribe. Unfortunately for White, he never did discover what happened to the colony. Soon after he arrived in Roanoke, a series of storms battered his ships, forcing his team back to their boats and eventually back to England. With an ocean once again between him and his family, a devastated White surrendered Roanoke to its unknown fate. But what happened to the lost colonists? Perhaps they were abducted by Native Americans, or moved inland to join a friendly tribe. Maybe they were slaughtered by Spaniards marching up from Florida, or tried to sail back to England on their own and got lost at sea. Archaeologists have yet to come up with any sign of the lost colony, and time is running out. Shoreline erosion threatens the island, making the lost colonists' outcome more of a mystery each passing day. Let's conclude this edition of Reader's Digest with a bunch of quotable quotes. First, from Bear Grylls' Adventurer, who wants to reach the end of their life in a perfectly preserved body? The scars and the crinkles and the cracks are what make us interesting. From Judy Scheinlin, Judge Judy, of course, there's no cap on success. The jury stays out till you take your last breath. From former President George W. Bush, the problem with taking it easy is that it sounds attractive at first, until you get into a routine of doing nothing, and you don't expand your mind or help anybody else. From music producer Quincy Jones, ego is just an overdressed insecurity. From writer Maya Angelou, try to be a rainbow in someone's cloud. From actor Priyanka Chopra, no matter where you are in the world, somebody will be worse off than you. And if you think like that, you will always have the mindset to give back. From writer Carl Hyacin, never stop worrying. Live each day as if your rent is due tomorrow. From businessman Jeff Bezos of Amazon, the great thing about ideas is that every new idea leads to two more. Ideas breed. From actor Constance Wu, I think half or almost all of the pain in the world is people not feeling seen. It's like Mr. Rogers, my hero, says, love is at the root of everything, love or the lack of it. From comedian Steve Martin, thankfully, perseverance is a great substitute for talent. From ballet dancer Tony Bentley, grace is a consequence of humility. From entrepreneur Naval Ravikant, free education is abundant all over the internet. It's the desire to learn that's scarce. From novelist Charlotte Bronte, I avoid looking forward or backward and try to keep looking upward. From actor Brad Pitt, there's no love without loss. It's a package deal. From Prince Charles, anyone of my age knows that days pass at a far greater speed than when they were young. From actor Gabourey Sidibe, people always ask me, you have so much confidence. Where did that come from? It came from me. One day I decided that I was beautiful, so I carried out my life as if I was a beautiful girl. And finally, from Jules Holland, musician, like most people, what I find irritating in others are my own faults. Thank you for listening to today's Reader's Digest. If you have questions or comments about the program, please call us at 210-829-4223. This program is replayed after 9 o'clock in the evening. This is John Fisher saying goodbye from Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center in San Antonio.